Hello, I'm Richard Blanco. Welcome to Inside Property. In this programme, we are discussing the ethical landlord and investor. How does being ethical differ from simply being a decent landlord or a social letting agency? We'll explore some of the values, political ideas and social aspirations that might set some investors apart. Can we persuade the public to see property professionals as ethical? And are our customers increasingly demanding good governance? How do ethical operators run their businesses? What motivates them? Who benefits? And is there something we could all be doing to encourage the wider landlord and investment community to nurture their social conscience? Well, I'm going to introduce my guests one by one and ask them to tell us a bit about their businesses before we delve into some of these meatier issues. And I'd like to start with Susan Actemel, who is Director of Homes for Good based in Glasgow. Now, Susan, tell us a bit about your business.
Homes for Good is, first and foremost, it's a letting agency. It works across the mainstream private rented sector, but it's structured as a social enterprise. And what that means is that it's a commercial business, but its core values and its social aims are equally as important as being viable and making a profit. And it's the first letting agency of its kind in the country, in Scotland, and possibly in the UK as well. We also, alongside, have a sister company which has raised significant investment to buy and renovate property that we then rent out to people specifically in low incomes and receipt of housing benefits. And we've done that to address the housing shortage that is across the country, particularly at the lower end of the income levels.
And I was looking at the stats earlier, there's something like 10,000 or over 10,000 people in Scotland in temporary accommodation. I mean, can you summarise some of the issues for us that tenants on low incomes face trying to access housing in Scotland, Susan?
Yes, I think the issues in Scotland are really pretty similar to what's going on across the UK. The advantage that we have is that we're, as a small country with some devolved government, we can mobilise perhaps quickly and the scale of the problem seems addressable. But the challenges that people have, if you're on low income and you're unable to afford to buy a house or you can't get a mortgage, you've got to rent a property and you have two options. You either have social housing through the local authority or a housing association, or it's the private rented sector. Now, from a social housing point of view, most of the housing associations in Scotland have got waiting lists, and so you could be waiting to get a house in the area that you want to live in for a really, really long time. If you want to live in a particular area, the private rented sector in theory is an option. But what we found and what we all know, we see these in lots of different surveys, is that the vast majority of landlords and letting agents are reluctant or will even refuse point blank to let to people in receipt of housing benefit. And quite often, the only choice that people might have in the private rented sector could be quite poor quality. So that was really why I created Homes for Good. It was to address the issues around quality for people that are really limited in their housing choice.
Yes, and the pool of landlords that are willing to rent in this area, according to NLA research, has fallen below 20%. And, you know, a lot of people are reluctant because the local housing allowance doesn't cover the rent, etc. How hard are you finding it to get landlords involved?
Well, Homes for Good works across the private rented sector, so the majority of the landlords that we engage with are not necessarily letting to people on low incomes. They will be letting, you know, we have properties that are, you know, a four-figure sum of monthly rental and, you know, in some of the more valuable parts of the city, if you like. So the landlords who we match the right tenants with the right landlords and the right properties. So the landlords who do have properties where the market rent is more or less at the local housing allowance level, and in Glasgow we are fortunate that we don't have the same critical gap between local housing allowance and market rent that there are in other parts of the country. So it is still possible to rent a one or two bedroom flat or a three bedroom house for a local housing allowance level in places like Glasgow and other parts of Scotland. So the landlords who have got properties that are at that market rent level are generally much more receptive and understand that the people in housing benefit are probably their ideal tenants.
Okay, well, I'd like to bring in my second guest, who is Mary-Ann Richmond-Coggan. Now, you have a property portfolio in South East London and use some of the profits to purchase and develop Green Farm Kent. It is your home, but it's much more than that, isn't it, Mary-Ann?
Yes, that's right. We started off taking an old building and totally renovating it, and then we bought next door, which was falling down, and we just evolved over time. But what we're currently doing is trying to build a successful high-end business in sort of holiday let, retreats, a small private spa, etc. And that is geared up to be as successful as it can, so we can then subsidise all the charitable activities, which are basically the main objectives are to preserve nature, work with wildlife. We have partnerships with Kent Wildlife, and to get kids outdoors and active and knowing where the food's come. And that's the disadvantage kids from London. So what we want to do, and a lot of the time we've got a couple of staff, an apprentice, a vulnerable lady that became an apprentice, and we subsidise a lot of that with, at the moment, some of the rental income. But as the business becomes more successful, the idea is that the business will subsidise that. So having had and invested in property has given me the freedom to take risks that other people perhaps couldn't have done, and to be more generous. So if the business that we're building isn't doing so well some months, I'm still able to pay the people that manage the community garden and the apprentice. And this is the core for people coming down to Green Farm. Kids get to see where vegetables are grown, they get to enjoy the animals and all that sort of stuff. So it's, the model is, don't think that being successful in business is a dirty word. It's like it enables me to choose. I don't have to go to funding. If people come and enjoy Green Farm, kids come down, you see their faces. Their parents may not even be able to afford a holiday, but I can give them that because the people that pay a lot of money are subsidising that for them. So that's the idea. And without the success of the properties or the success of the business, I wouldn't be able to do that.
And you've actually set up a charity, haven't you, a foundation as part of your model. Can you tell me a bit about that?
Well, the plan is we're in the process of trying to set it up. It was quite complicated because our overall plan is to give everything at Green Farm to the charity. But we don't want to just give it to someone. We want to create a structure so it can live on way past stuff and it won't just get sold off to be used for something else. We want Green Farm to live on and be a benefit to people that wouldn't normally have the exposure to be able to come to the country, camp and enjoy everything that is great about being in nature.
Now, my third guest, Ed Folkes, is Development Director of Prosperity Capital Partners and has been a landlord investor since 1993. Tell us about the investments you've been working on, Ed.
So Prosperity actually is a developer, and we invest into student accommodation in partnership with universities and also with pension funds, and more recently into build-to-rent, which is the sort of new rental sector of the residential property world. So within the private rental sector, but within the sort of new kind of form of private rental sector, there's typically also affordable housing, so discounted market rent properties, as they're known, which are, the rent is set depending on the wage of the person who is living there, rather than depending on necessarily a discount from the market rent. So it may be that there's a 5% discount, or it may be there's a 75% discount, and partly that is set by the local authority, who provides the planning permission as part of the, you know, affordable provision that the development provides, sort of thing. These are then invested. We use, you know, private individuals the same way as I used to when I was a buy-to-let landlord, to help fund the initial stages of those projects. But then typically it's a pension fund or something like that which will invest in the long-term vision, and they will get a yield for their pension for 30 years plus. And depending on if it's in conjunction with a local authority, then the local authority will pay the rent to the investor, but then they will obviously make a profit on the rents that they get subsidised by the state. And at the end of the 30-year lease that they've taken, often we can structure it so that they actually inherit the property and the land at the end of it. So they take it off the investor and with a payment of a pound, effectively. So it's sort of using quite clever financial structures of investment structure to allow it to sort of actually manage to be a gain for everyone involved. Which is typically one of those things where, you know, if you're a businessman and very hard-nosed capitalist, then Trump's, you know, Trump always says, it's not about a win-win, it's about me winning and forget the rest of them sort of thing, although he probably uses swear words when he says that. But yeah, our kind of vision is actually that's not really how business should be done. Business is about collaboration much more than competition.
And you've had a long journey as an investor, haven't you? Because you were founder and host of the Property Investor Network meeting at Canary Wharf. And also you set up Steady Rent, which I think worked with a charity to help people who were in housing need. Didn't you? Can you tell us a bit about that?
Yeah, so that was that really came off the back of being a buy-to-let investor and realizing that there were, I guess, you know, as part of being a decent landlord, it's not only looking after your tenants, but it's also looking after your business. And if you can sort of get to a situation a little bit like Marianne, where you realize that actually you're generating profits, which, you know, as an individual person or as a, I'm a, you know, family, now, you know, I've got a wife and two children and, you know, there's only a certain amount of funds every year that you can literally spend sort of thing before it gets a bit obscene. So actually, if you're quite good at what you do in terms of business, then you can start to see, well, there's stuff that we can do other than just spend the money. You know, I don't require a car other than one that works and does what we need to do and carries the dog around in the boot. So actually having, you know, a spare car, which is a Porsche, just isn't really part of what I want to do. And I'd rather actually start to give that back. And I've been, you know, I've been inspired in life by people like property investors and developers. So Jack Petchy is a great example. You know, he's born and bred in the East End. He's an extremely successful developer and used to be quite a hard man. He was known as Black Jack for quite a long period of his life, and you wouldn't have wanted to mess with him. But his name is on two academies in East London, you know, schools, which are, you know, free schools to go to. And pretty much every single penny from all his businesses now go to fund foundations to help you know, children at state school learn to speak publicly and that sort of thing. And they train sort of, you know, thousands of children every year to do that. And that's what his business is. Once he got to a stage where he couldn't really spend any more money, it's like, well, what else are you going to do with it? You know, eventually you get old enough and you go, okay, I've realised now it's actually about helping other people, not just about helping myself and my family and that.
Susan, you come from an arts background, don't you? And you worked with a community arts agency called Impact Arts in Scotland. But you were also a developer at the same time. I think you bought properties and rented them out. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
And so what motivated you to set up a kind of social enterprise type letting agency?
Well, you know, the whole idea of working in social enterprise was something that I just stumbled upon by accident. So the social enterprise movement has been around probably for about maybe 15 years or so now. And I set up Impact Arts in 1994 because I think right at the beginning of my working career, I made a decision that I had a lot of opportunity and I had a lot of choice about what sort of career path I could have. But I made a specific decision to use my skills to improve the lives of other people, and that was really what Impact Arts was all about. And as you said, at the same time, probably a couple of years after I started Impact Arts, I started to I became a landlord by accident, as many of us do. And then in 1999, I actively started developing property as a long-term wealth strategy, if you like, for my family. So as the years went by over, you know, the first decade of the millennium when the property market was going crazy and we were all making money from that, I had my property portfolio, which I built up. I had that managed by other letting agents, and I suppose I saw firsthand the things that go wrong when a letting agent doesn't behave well, the things that go wrong for the tenant and the things that go wrong for the landlord. So when I got to about 2010, a number of things happened that made me decide I was going to set up Homes for Good. One was that I decided I wanted to create a new business, that I'd taken Impact Arts as far as I felt like I wanted to, and then it was time to hand it on to somebody else. The second thing was that I was really very focused on working in property full time. I wanted to see what I could do if I did that, and what I could achieve, and there was an opportunity and a need in the market. So when I created the letting agency, it was at the time that the Office of Fair Trading report came out about letting agents from a landlord's perspective, and when the shelter reports came out about tenants' views on letting agents. So it was almost perfect timing, everything was aligned. And really, to set it up as a social enterprise, that's just what I do. I think you know what Ed said around you can only spend so much money, and we have enough as a family. I've created enough. I have enough. You know, I've got an ability to earn enough money. So I'm very keen to create structures where we can invest. I can generate a good sort of surplus in business and profits over time, but reinvest it into the things that I really care about.
And of course, we often don't associate the term ethical with letting agents. Lots of us have stories of where letting agents have let us down a bit, sadly. I know there are some great ones out there, but letting agents don't always have a great reputation with the public. I guess in many ways, you're a good role model for letting agents, are you, Susan?
So one of our core social aims is to lead by example and to improve the quality of property and management that goes on in the sector. I think the challenge for there are lots of good and bad letting agents, there are good and bad landlords, there are good and bad tenants. We all know that. But one of the challenges within letting is that you are the middleman. You're in between the landlords and the tenants. And so sometimes you end up getting the flack for something that might not necessarily be anything that you can influence or control. I think that I do know that there are a number of letting agencies around the country, around the rest of the UK, and England specifically, that are keen to look at closely at what Homes for Good has done and replicate that.
Marianne, I want to ask you about this idea of the ethical landlord or investor. How much is that just about good practice, just about being a good landlord, or is it actually about withholding some of those profits and being prepared to spend them on somebody or something else?
That's a difficult one. I think it does make business sense to be a good landlord, but I think that's, for me, it's a byproduct rather than that's why I'm being a good landlord. So you want to do the right thing, but I actually think it means that tenants respect you more. They're much, they look after the property, they're honest. You know, sometimes I get told 10 months before, oh, we're looking to buy a house, just wanting to let you know. They don't need to do that. So it's getting prepared. It's about an open relationship. And do I always get it right? I probably don't, because we all make mistakes. I try and do the right thing. But I think it's exactly the same. You know, people moan about builders. I love my builders. They're brilliant. And I wouldn't be able to do what I do now without great builders. And I think if you expect the best from people and you treat them well, that's the starting point. And then that then creates an environment around you where you create that culture. But you have, again, what the other lady was saying, you've got to lead by example. You start off by saying, I want to be treated right. So therefore, that's how I'm going to treat people.
Could you imagine more landlords doing something similar to what you're doing? That is, setting up a foundation or some other route for channeling their profits into something ethical?
I think people have changed. I think there are more people that want to do stuff. I think but it is about, you've got to get to that point where you're comfortable, and then you're in a position where you can do more with that. But not everybody has that sense of being quite happy with what they've got. You know, it's like we only have one car, me and my husband, we live in the country, but you know, one of us will get a taxi or ride a bike, and we're 4.5 miles from the station. Having a nice car is not what's important to us. Having said that, I do need quite a bit of money, because I'm always doing these big projects, and they're done with such good products that they do, you know, any building project that's done to build to last is going to actually cost a lot of money. So that's where I spend a lot of my money on, other than actually the other stuff I do.
You're listening to Inside Property with me, Richard Blanco, and my guests on this programme are Susan Actemel, Director of Homes for Good, Marianne Richmond Coggan from Green Farm Kent, and Ed Folks, who is Development Director of Prosperity Capital Partners. And we're examining the issue of the ethical landlord and investor. Now, Ed, I wanted to ask you, how is what you and your company are doing different from someone just profiting from a niche market? I mean, we do hear some rather unfortunate stories in the press of landlords kind of configuring properties purposely for as many LHA tenants as possible, and you know, then actually getting very high yields from the property, and you know, that doesn't seem very ethical. Why is what you're doing by providing kind of accommodation for local authorities more ethical than that?
So I think to a large extent it's not, is kind of quite clearly the kind of obvious answer. And I think as both sort of Susan and Marianne have said, you know, we all share a kind of similar opinion where we sort of were able to give back once actually we'd made ourselves comfortable. It was much easier to do that, you know, if you're in a position of comfort. My parents, you know, the reason why I have ethics is principally because of what my parents taught me before I was seven. And those have kind of stayed with me ever since. And they did sort of teach me, you know, actually that some of what you earn ought to be given to charity. So we, you know, back when I was an artist, I was a painter, and 10% of every single price tag on my paintings would always be going to charity. And at the time it was Childline and the Child Cancer Trust. So those are the two sort of charities. And I still, to this day, actually, although the social enterprise that you mentioned earlier, and I apologise because I didn't answer your question that you asked with all the ramblings that I did, that was actually set up to provide care for vulnerable women. So women had been beaten up, or women had suffered drug addiction, or just come out of prison. And it was sort of set up to use the profits from rental properties to actually pay for the psychological care that the government wouldn't fund, because it was sort of outside of there. It wasn't quite at risk enough, but they were still seeing as being at risk individuals. And I think that sort of every time I set up a business, Steady Rent was slightly different, as it was specifically, although it was just structured as a company in terms of the legalities, it was set up specifically as a social enterprise. But every time sort of I'm running a company or part owner of a company like I am with Prosperity, actually we set it up to run as a profitable company. Yeah, but we wouldn't want to do anything that we weren't happy with the ethics of. And that's sort of just as the leaders of the company, the people who set the process in motion, there are plenty of ways of making money. You don't have to hurt people along the way. And that's basically what we decided that, you know, was the way to do it. And by making those choices, it's a bit like making the choice of how much do you try and recycle, you know, or that sort of thing, because you don't actually have to cook different food to recycle more. But actually, eventually, you start choosing different products because they've got less packaging that's easier to recycle, or they've just got less packaging on them, or whatever. And it's the same, I think, as a developer or an investor or whatever. You start realizing that actually you're making choices because of the ethics that you have. And therefore, you will look after your tenants better rather than just they become numbers on a spreadsheet for you. But they still are the numbers on the spreadsheet. You still have to make the money, make the business make money. Otherwise, you won't have a business and you can't help anyone. You know, so I think charities are a slightly different issue because their budget is including their profit, as it were, because it's recycled back in. Whereas actually companies, social enterprises are set up to make a profit, which then can fund other things, which is what Marianne is doing.
Well, Susan, your company is structured as a community interest company. Can you tell us a bit about that and how that works?
Yeah, so it's quite simple. It's Homes for Good Scotland CIC is the letting agency, and that's a community, it's a company limited by guarantee, and not by share. So that is an asset locked business, and I was attracted to that business model when I was setting it up because it gave me the balance of the control and influence that an entrepreneur wants to have, and the ability to earn a living in your own business, which is sometimes difficult in the charitable world. But it also shows our intent quite clearly. I think that the whole thing around ethics and profits and what you do with them. Sometimes you need to, certainly as a letting agent, us being asset locked. So what we're saying is we are not wanting to manage your business purely to make the maximum profit that we can. There are other things. That was quite an important statement for us to make, and it's something that contributes to people feeling a sense of safety and trust in the way that we work. The other side of the business, the sister company, is a private company limited by share, and the shares are split between myself. I've also gifted my letting agency half of the shares that I owned, because I wanted a long-term asset and balance sheet for the letting agency, and our equity partner and investor also owns shares. So that's a sort of, they're connected businesses, but they're separate, but they're connected in their ownership. So it's quite an interesting, unique model, I think, that we've created.
I wonder if you think, Susan, there could be more help in terms of tax reliefs, because it's sometimes argued that if landlords were encouraged to let their properties perhaps to local authorities for 3 or 5 year leasing schemes, by having some sort of tax concessions like capital gains rollover relief and that sort of thing, do you think there are enough tax incentives for landlords to be ethical?
I think the short answer there is no. And what we've seen from bearing in mind that talking to people like Ed and myself, we're probably the exception rather than the rule currently in the private rented sector. So you have, whatever the statistic is, 75% of landlords own one property in the country. So we've got hundreds of thousands of individual landlords who have now been penalised by the introduction of Section 24 tax. So that's going to make it harder for landlords to make any profits on their properties. And actually, what we're seeing in Scotland certainly are that rents are creeping up rather than going back, because landlords must find a way of settling their tax bills. So what we've seen is landlords being penalised. On the other side, I don't really know very much about tax reliefs, but the number one thing that I think could change and unlock a lot of investment into the more corporate sector, in terms of corporate landlords that are working at scale the way that I'm hoping to and that Ed currently is, would be social investment tax relief. That's a really interesting piece of legislation that was put through, but property was excluded from that. So if we had an ability, and I've spoken to the Cabinet Office about this, if people had an ability to get social investment tax relief on property, it would unlock a lot of investment into the sector that would then possibly unlock a lot of housing being dedicated for social use.
Well, Mary-Anne, I'm wondering how Section 24 and the recent tax changes are affecting you, and will that mean that actually you've got fewer profits to put back into the charitable things that you're trying to do?
Well, I think a lot of my... Luckily, I've got commercial property as well. So it's just a question of a lot of that I've invested in the last 10 years has the normal sort of business rules on stuff. So that's how I've sort of... I don't think it's going to affect me so much, because I've invested over the last 10 years in mainly commercial property.
So the way you've structured actually benefits what you're trying to do in terms of the ethical side of the business.
Mm.
And what could we be doing to encourage more landlords to invest ethically? I'm wondering if there's a role for the trade bodies like the National Landlords Association, the RLA or ALA. You don't hear them talking very much about ethical landlords or ethical investment. Do you think there's a role for them there, Mary-Anne?
I think there is, but people just don't see the way that they can do it at the moment. And it's not really that straightforward and clear how you could be able to do it. I mean, I know a very rich... land-rich farmer who would absolutely love to use some of his land to build affordable housing, but he just doesn't feel like he could do that. And that's the worrying thing about it. He doesn't need the money. He's a very modest sort of guy and quite a character. He's got loads of land. You know, it's in the Ashford area where there's lots of pressure to build. But he doesn't want to just give that land up just for developers. He would love to make it available to local people and make it really affordable.
Of course, the public doesn't generally see landlords as generous people, and we're always struggling with the negative press that we get. I wonder if in some way that holds people back from, giving more back.
Yeah, I think it probably does. I mean, this particular guy is quite interesting. He's in the late 80s. I mean, he loves to do the deal, and he does have a lot of local housing allowance tenants, and he's quite happy to do that. In fact, his daughter I was speaking to, she manages that for him now. But, you know, to clearly know that, yeah, I'd love to give it to local people, and he really wants to do that. But I think it's making it easier for those sort of people to do that. I mean, I've got some land, and if I really felt that I could, that there was an incentive or somebody could help me set up something that could be really strict and done in a way that it is affordable, and it's sort of, you've got a mix of social housing and everything else. I also think once you should give it to everybody. Everybody should be allowed to live in good quality accommodation. And once you raise the standard of what's expected of somebody and what they can actually achieve, it raises the whole well-being of everybody. That would be my thing.
Ed, I'm wondering to what extent investors increasingly are expecting us to be ethical or, you know, have good governance, and to what extent that is a selling point, perhaps, for you working with, you know, universities or local authorities and public bodies.
So for investors, sort of certainly on an institutional scale or institutional level, they create funds for investment, and the funds have different requirements. So there are certain funds which are set up as ethical investment funds, which means that everything that they invest in needs to have some kind of social conscience. So real estate ethical fund, if it's for residential, then it will need to actually have a certain percentage of affordable or social housing provision within each scheme it invests in. So if you've not got an affordable requirement in your scheme, you can't go to them for the development finance. You have to go to a different fund or for the investment finance. But when they set themselves up, then they go out to the market as an ethical fund, and typically they can bring money in at a lower percentage return, because the companies that invest with them, that's sort of, it's seen as being, well, it's an ethical fund, therefore we don't need quite as much money out of it. Personally, I'm just not sure that, it's a bit like the argument for, I mentioned recycling before, the argument for being environmental and green is not actually so that you have to spend more money or it costs you more money or you make less money out of it. It's just, you know, we find ways of making sure that we're not actually being bad to the planet, because I'd like my grandchildren to have somewhere to live rather than having to emigrate to Mars with Elon Musk. And actually, that's really the reason for doing it. But there are definitely ways of doing pretty much everything well and being nice to people at the same time and earning just as much money. So you can be doubly nice to people on the back end if you want to, sort of thing. So I'm not sure it's necessarily about the encouragement needs to come through education. And this is whether it's for small investors or large investors. A lot of the people that I know who are, and because I ran Canary Wharf PIN, I met a lot of buy-to-let investors especially, but developers as well. And most of them, most of the ones I got on with were relatively ethical people in the first place, because I don't really get on with people who are sharks. But typically they will kind of, you know, be wanting to grow their business so that then they can create a foundation and blah, 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 and start to give back. But they actually, they're not educated necessarily enough to understand that they could make different choices on the way as well. And so actually it just comes through education the way anything does. If you allow people to understand more, then they have the ability to make those choices.
Susan, let me ask you about some other models for letting agents, because there's a social letting agency model, isn't there, which some local authorities have set up to provide a service for vulnerable tenants or council nominated tenants or people on local housing allowance. There's also a scheme which Shelter Scotland runs to try and help a number of different agents, kind of mainstream letting agents, provide support around tenancy sustainment and so on. How successful do you think these schemes are?
The scheme that Shelter Scotland has set up, which is really just, you know, offering some assistance to, as you say, existing letting agents to maybe overcome some of the barriers to why they might not let people on low incomes. That's still in quite early stages. So we've yet to see the full results of the impact of having that sort of advisory education piece that sits with letting agents. And from, we're actually part of that project. We're we're both working alongside and advising them on aspects of what they're doing. My understanding is that the other letting agencies that are involved are the ones that are the ones most likely to behave in an ethical way anyway. So we're not necessarily, we're almost preaching to the converted. You know, the agencies that are involved are really receptive. I think the social letting agency side of things is a different ballgame altogether. We've been quite involved in talking to social letting agencies around their business model, and the challenge is that quite often a social letting agency is created to provide housing for people that are really quite vulnerable and in real housing need, you know, coming out of homelessness that may have multiple other challenges that are preventing them from sustaining a tenancy well. And typically, I think the key challenge in all of this is encouraging landlords to provide the properties in the first place, because you've got a barrier that the local housing allowance in most parts of the UK is lower than the market rent. So there's not a financial incentive for the landlord to give the property over. The second thing is that there's a perception of risk. And I say perception because 9 times out of 10, the reality is different. But 1 or 2 times out of 10, there are damages and there are arrears and there are problems. And I think the social letting agencies don't have enough resource, they don't have enough staff resource sometimes, or they don't have enough finance to underwrite the risks to make it easy for landlords to, you know, happily hand their properties over, you know, to be, you know, to provide housing. So I think that they all seem to come out of local authorities most of the time, where there's a subsidy from, you know, the local authority providing staffing. We're yet to see the ones that are really standing alone very successfully at scale.
Right, yes. And I mean, some of those concerns, I think, are echoed by a lot of the landlords I deal with as well around social letting agents. Marianne, I wanted to ask you, do you find that people wanting to let the holiday let, do they come to you because of your green credentials?
I don't think they do. I think it's interesting because I don't think... It's sometimes could work the other way, and it is quite hilarious. Some of the people that are the greenest are the ones that leave the most rubbish. We have a real challenge. We try and make, we've got composting. There's certain things we use, white paper napkins in our spa, so that can then go in the compost and all that sort of stuff. I mean, Catherine, who works in our community garden, takes recycling to a different level. So I don't think they do. I mean... And we don't preach it either. I mean, we source our logs from our ancient woodland, and that's managed. We have ground source heat pump. We have solar thermal, solar panels, rainwater harvesting. We have the lot, but we don't really push it because I don't think people really understand it enough yet.
And let me finish off by asking you, actually, Marianne, if somebody were thinking, hey, I've made quite a lot of money out of my property portfolio, we've had a good 10 years or 9 years probably since the crash, and they're wanting to put some money back or become more ethical in some way, how do they go about starting?
I think the starting point is not to try and do it. I think you've got to be passionate about what you're doing. I grew up in a city, and I was lucky enough to have the countryside and have access to the countryside. So the passion comes from thinking everybody should have the countryside and what it actually gave me. So that's where that comes from. And my dad was evacuated in the war from Battersea, and he fell in love with the countryside just in those couple of years he was evacuated. I think it's about following your passion, because if you love something, you know, I would never buy a house I didn't like where I wouldn't want to live. Because if you're passionate about something, when it's tough, you're still in love with it. So I don't think you should try and be like somebody else. I think you should invest because something fits you, not because you think it's the thing to do.
Okay. And a quick thought from you, Ed, on somebody who's thinking of investing in a more ethical way. Where do they start?
So I totally agree, Marianne. It's what we used to call in PIN, and also when I used to help people invest in property, it's your reason why. You know, why are you doing this? People start investing in property for wealth creation normally. But it's normally because it allows them then to be able to not have to be in a job so that they can go and do something else. And it may be that they just want to sit on the sofa and be a couch potato, but typically it's because they want to go to Uganda and start and help with a charity, or because they really like bikes and they want to get people back on bikes instead of being on the road. So it's whatever you are really intent on making a difference with, and that's where you should start. Otherwise, give your money to charity, because they already have the passion and they want to make it right.
I guess you'd echo this, Susan. You need passion to get it off the ground, don't you? A final tip from you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that, you know, if the question is, you know, how can landlords who have made money, do more from an ethical perspective, you could, as a landlord, choose, if you wanted to take a lower return on the investments that you have. And then, you know, by working with an agency like ours, create this, you know, have somebody third hand create the social impact. You absolutely need passion and commitment to get social businesses and ethical businesses off the ground. There is no doubt about that. You have to love what you do. However, if it is about people having created wealth and wanting to give something back, there are relatively easy ways that you could get a significant impact with the property that you own. Just by dropping the aspiration of income that you're looking for example, to make it affordable for somebody. So there are a whole number of different ways to do it, I think.
Okay, well, that's it for this programme. My thanks to my guests, Susan Actemel, Mary-Ann Richmond-Coggan, Ed Folks, and to you for listening. You can get in touch with the programme by going to insideproperty.org.uk. And Inside Property is produced in collaboration with the National Landlords Association.